This episode of the Backside Ground Balls podcast is presented by The Performance Academy. For all of your athletic training needs, train with purpose at The Performance Academy. TPA houses a number of training resources from private baseball and softball instruction to team sports performance classes. Utilize advanced technologies like Output Sports, HitTrax, and TrackMan to take your game to the next level. On top of our elite staff and advanced technological capabilities, be a part of the TPA family and take advantage of the many resources our facility has to offer. Want to go to a game? How about a concert? How about going to see classical music? Whatever you're into, there's only one place to get your tickets. And thankfully, we are partnered with SeatGeek, the essential resource for live events. For any of your ticket needs, make sure you go over to SeatGeek.com and use the code BACKSIDEGROUNDBALL to receive $20 off your first purchase. Again, that is SeatGeek.com. Promo code Backside Ground Ball to receive $20 off your first purchase. We are super excited to announce that we are now partnering with Routine Baseball. For all of your clothing needs, athleisure, the sickest baseball gear you can get. We're talking hoodies, shorts, sweatpants, sunglasses, hats, any baseball style you can imagine, Routine Baseball has it, and we are now partnered with them. All you got to do is go to routine.com/backsideground ball. That's a mouthful, so I'm going to say it again. It's routine.com/backsideground ball and check out all the different options they have. You will receive 10% off your order today. One more time, routine.com/backsideground ball and get 10% off your order today.
We're just going to try this until it works. What are our thoughts?
That was awesome. I appreciate you not telling me that that was coming. That fired me up. I was, you know, it's late. It's been a long week. I needed that. I'm fired up. Like, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to put my head through a wall here. It's so much better. I mean, yeah. I think so. I was over the old one. I told you that.
Yeah, I gotta come up with a I'm hoping that normally it's gonna fade out better, and then I'm gonna go right into an intro. But I had to get in there and obviously ask your opinion because you're delayed on my end. So it looked you actually like when I was going through your reaction, we were already like finishing the song, and I was talking when you finally realized that there was something going on. But
the delay is that bad.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad right now. You're rocking from the home base, the OG Backside Ground Balls recording studio on your end. I'm rocking from the home base. It's late at night. We're going to try to get through this. We're basically talking to a blank screen at this point. Hopefully I don't get distracted too much by the fact that you're like 3 minutes behind your actual when stuff's coming through my ear. But on the back end, it always comes out good. YouTube, everything looks good. So I'm not too worried about it. But welcome back to the Backside Ground Balls podcast, as we are already 2 minutes into this and we are reeling at this point. It's late at night. We've gotten comfortable with the 9 o'clock, with this 4 o'clock records recently. And now we're breaking out another 9 o'clock record. And anybody that's been here since day one, 9 o'clock records get off the rails very quickly. So we're going to try to keep this one in. We're going to try to get in, get out. Get this out for everybody as we look forward to weekend 9 across college baseball.
I got a fly just buzzing my tower right now. This is a mess. This is going to come across good on the YouTube space, and you're going to see a little fly in the thumbnail here. Yeah, happy to be back. Let's talk some college baseball. It's late at night. Stu, it's good to see you. It's been a while.
It has been a while. It has been a while.
I get so comfortable seeing you for so long, and then, you know, totally normal for us two to. It should be normal for us two to go. I don't know. a week. Did you see it? I know your video's still late, but did you see it? Yeah. It should be normal for us to go a week without seeing each other, but I saw you and I was like, dang, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's funny because I was thinking about that same thing of just like, you know, like we've done a much better job. There was a point in time where like even when we would be like you would be on vacation, like I'd still bother you a lot more or I'd head home for something. I'd still bother you a lot more or something like that. I feel like we've gotten a good routine of actually giving you your space when you're at home or away from North Carolina. But my Dan radar goes off the second you cross that state line. And I know on Friday, you're going to be getting like 3 text messages and a call from me when you hop in that car to come back down south.
Yeah, for sure. And I appreciate it. It is there, but like sometimes it's weird too at times because I get so accustomed to it that like there are moments where like, man, I haven't heard from Trevor.
I hope everything's okay.
Hope we're good. I do something. Was I supposed to do something? Forget to do it.
Is he going full solo pod on me?
Did I get kicked? Yeah. Did I get fired while I was home? The heck? And then I'd hear from you, which is much appreciated. But yeah, Friday. Very excited to be back home in the Carolinas Friday. Fired up.
Yeah. We'll be fired up. The weather's turning. We'll get some rounds of golf in. Make a couple business expenses there at Keith Hills and we'll make sure we get caught up in the better weather of the Southeast. So let's talk a little bit about what happened across the country in weekend 8. A lot of interesting stuff, a couple in particular, as LSU dropped another series to Vanderbilt, which they continue a negative trend to the year. We feel like we've spent so much time talking about LSU, so we'd rather not spend too much time. But again, the reigning national champions are not riding hot at this point in the year, and they have another weekend ahead as they head to Tennessee, where they're going to be challenged. And that Tennessee team's obviously number 4 in the country. Florida was swept by Missouri and then got dog walked by Florida State 19-3. So we always knew they were going to lose midweek games, but last week they decided to win their midweek game, got swept in the weekend series, and then got beat up in the midweek game. We'll see what happens as they play host to South Carolina. And then also in the SEC, Kentucky swept Alabama as they move into the top 10 of the country. Kentucky seems like a legit SEC contender. And then as we head to the ACC as well, Wake Forest swept Virginia Tech in the first edition of the Backside Ground Balls Bowl, which is sponsored by the Backside Ground Balls. Make sure you check it out. Anything that you need from the Backside Ground Balls, we were both on campus at Wake Forest and Virginia Tech, so I'm going to patent that and make sure we're good to go with that. But, Dan, what are your initial thoughts as those 3 or those 4 series and looking at those results?
Yeah, Florida, we kind of knew this was – you knew this was coming. It was brewing, and we talked about it for weeks now. Like, they can't – it's hard to continuously pick and choose when to show up. We've been making the 2-2 joke. They go 1-3 last week, but we make the 2-2 joke every week now because they kept dropping midweeks. And then, oh, it's a conference series. We're going to show up. Go to Missouri and you get jumped because you can't turn it on and off like a switch. We've been saying that now for weeks. And we said this had the possibility of happening where one week you can't, you know, you don't flip the switch on and you get beat by a team that you should beat. On the other hand, Tennessee last year went to Missouri and got swept, and everyone thought the sky was falling. You know, Tony Petello then benched everyone in the midweek. They rebounded. They kind of got things together. That's when they made a lot of changes to the rotation, if you recall. That's when Chase Burns went to the bullpen. And they turned their season around and ended up in Omaha. So maybe that's the wake-up, the full wake-up call Florida needed is the initial reaction. And then you come out in the midweek and you get beat 19-3 by Florida State. So I don't know. You would expect against a South Carolina team that has been extremely inconsistent. They got a huge midweek win, though, against UNC. I would expect – like I think Florida is the team to kind of watch this weekend because I think it's going to tell us a lot about how they finish this thing out because we're starting now to get to the back end of the year. This is the stretch run. The coach cliche, we won't be playing our best ball at the end of the year. Florida – like, this is your time. You got to get going, you know, to be in that position to kind of get yourself situated for postseason play. So it'll be fascinating to see how they come out against South Carolina, because there kind of looks like, you know, South Carolina gets a big momentum win in the midweek. Florida's reeling here with four in a row, dropping four in a row. So that'll be fascinating. Story of the weekend was Nick Kurtz.
Oh, yeah.
Agree with that?
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Unreal.
I mean, it's one of those things where whether you want to say the conversations we've had, what we saw with our own eyes, whatever it was, we're like, this is kind of not this level of Nick Kurtz, but obviously his average against UNC fell below 210 early in that second game of that series. He's now up to 318. We're not talking about UNC series as like a late February series. That was a long time ago. It was a week and a half ago, and he's already raised his average over 100 points. And that's not even to mention the fact that six of his last seven at bats, or at least a stretch of seven at bats, led to six home runs for him. I mean, again, like I said, there was a conversations that were being had that he was on fire. It was basically automatic homers every game they played against a really good pitching staff. Again, the example I like to use is he took Chase Burns' slider deep to right field on a 3-2 count, and Chase Burns' slider has above a 70% swing and miss rate at this point in time throughout this year. So not many people touch it, let alone hit it for a home run, and Nick Kurtz made it look easy. It's one of those situations where you see a guy who's about as hot can be, and it's literally like just uncomfortable. It's like, dude, his bat must have a magnet, and it was unbelievable. I mean, he was launching balls in Blacksburg, and then obviously what he was able to do against Coastal back home during the midweek as well is just, it's unbelievable. He's a stud, and it's good to see him actually producing like the talent that he actually is.
Yeah, I don't know if people appreciate, like, you just even, I know you appreciate it, but even just the way you said it was like kind of casual. Like, he homered in six, you know, there's a point where he had homered in six of seven at bats. Homered, didn't reach homered. Base, didn't get a hit. Homered, left the yard. Like, I don't think, like, I know that there is so many, you know, the way college baseball is now, the way offense is now, the way that people are, you know, able to drive the ball is kind of at a level we haven't seen in a long time since, you know, BB Corps came, and, you know, the baseball is different. And so these power numbers, obviously Caglino last year set the home run record, and Condon's going to threaten it this year. So obviously power's
threaten it,
you know. But yeah, well, he's probably going to.
He's got like 21.
You
like
never know. Yes. He's got 24. He could blow it out of the water. I understand that. I'm just saying, you never know. If a guy goes cold for a while, it could.
No, 100%.
He's probably going to pass it. He's on pace to pass it. But still, to homer in six of seven at bats is the stupidest thing ever. And it kind of reminds me, like, it is so rare to watch a player in baseball and just expect that outcome. But what he's done in this stretch here is you expect that outcome. And it's kind of like going back to when I was a kid and seeing Barry Bonds or McGuire and Sosa in the summer of 98, where it was like, oh, they didn't hit a homer. Like, you know, it was like, or Aaron Judge a couple years ago when he hit 60 plus, you're just like, every time it comes up, you expect home run.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those things that like is rare in baseball. And when it happens, like, it is so fun to watch. And the fact that he just goes up there and hits them to all fields against all different types of pitches, off pitches not in the strike zone. I think it was the second one on Sunday, the second of three on Sunday. Maybe it was the third one. It was like a slider up and away that was not a strike. And it was like he kind of just went out and got it and drove it out to left center. And it's just like watching someone be able to do that. And, you know, you talked about it. Like, that's what we had seen going into the year when we talked about how, you know, good Wake was going to be. And we talked about Nick Kurtz and how he could be 1-1 because the power is so legit and just how dynamic he is at the plate. And like, it was like, well, he got hurt, he was starting slow, and nothing was going right for Wake. And then just a little Natasha Bedingfield and that guy getting hot. I'm like, I'm back in on the Demon Deeks.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And we can talk about that and how cool that was, but let me ask you this, because I think it is a fascinating conversation point. When you talk about hitting six home runs in seven at-bats, think of it from a pitching coach's standpoint of like, what do you even do? Because like, there's no way. And again, like, we know those guys up at Virginia Tech, they're not just throwing caution to the wind in their decision making when they're throwing pitches out there, right? Like, what do you even do? Like, because, you know, it's like, okay, at bat one, let's just say, I'm not going to go off the top of my head and recite this, but like, let's just say at bat one, you hit a home run out. It's like, what's so impressive is at bat two, you probably hit a slider out. And then at bat three, you probably hit a changeup out. And then at bat four, they try to establish the fastball, but on the inner half, and then you hit it out. Like, it's literally like, I couldn't imagine being on that side trying to call pitches for a guy who's on a heater like that. Like, it's just unreal.
Well, you came to the right person because in 2022, we opened up our season at Lenoir Ryan, and they had a young man who played center field for them. I think he was playing center, named Wade Kuda. Good walk up. Barracuda was his walk up, but he went big fly three times on us in the opening day, first game. And so he was 3-for-4 with three homers. And then he hit another one the next day, but that was 3 and 8 at bats. And I remember at one point it was, I don't remember if it was Skip or I don't know if it was our hitting coach, Matt Trade, if it was Skip, if it was one of our other assistants, asked me like, what are you throwing him? Like, right? Like, what is it? And I looked and I just said, he's hit a fastball out. He's hit a slider out. He's hit a changeup out. I've tried everything. I don't, like, there's nothing. Like, he's just riding a heater. He's driving the ball out of the park. Like, and that's the feeling. Like, you just feel helpless. You're just like, we've called and thrown everything to this kid. You know, like, we've gone fastball up. We've gone in. We've gone away. We've gone, and, you know, there gets to a point that, you just kind of hope they get themselves out, right? And like, yeah, you would expect it. Like, that's, again, that's what makes it so hard, because so many times you do everything right, you're on to, and you still just miss, right? Like, how many times do you see someone just miss and they hit a high fly ball? Like, none of those balls were caught at the warning track. It's just fascinating to me because that, like, how hard hitting is that you can have everything go right. You know, pitch, location, timing, and you're all on it and it still doesn't get out. So for him to be able to do this, I mean, it just shows how special he is. And when you are on the other side of it, you kind of just at some point hope they get themselves out, or you walk them. Like, those are your two options. Like, it's almost like, don't throw them a strike, we'll live to fight another day.
No doubt. And it's just like, yeah, like, that's a cheat code right there to imagine being able to just get that hot for a stretch of time. I mean, that's unfathomable. No matter what ball environment, no matter what you want to say anything is, that's insane. And let's talk about the Demon Deacons just for a second here, because while they've struggled up to this point, right, Marik Husted lost time because of injuries. Nick Kearse lost time because of injuries. Obviously, the pitching staff hasn't lived up to at least what we imagined it was going to be, and everything that we came into the season with these high expectations. And obviously Chase Burns has been unbelievable, but they haven't lived up to the billing of the consensus number one team in the country. They were out of the rankings by some publications. You look at their record, they're 22-10 on the year. Now, that's with 7-8 in conference play, not what you'd expect. But coming off of that series sweep against at the hands of Carolina, there were a lot of questions about what this team could be. Coming out of the weekend where they swept Virginia Tech, who was a consensus top 12-15 team in the country, in dominant fashion, pitching looked good. Michael Massey threw on Sunday, looked good. Josh Hartle looked the best he'd looked in weeks. Then a nice little 12-3 win against obviously really good program in Coastal Carolina. And now they're going to head up north to Chestnut Hill to take on Boston College. You can start to buy into the team that we all saw at the beginning of the year and all thought this potentially could be as a national championship contender. And it seems like things are where last year things broke right and just went right the whole year. This year they hit 5, 6, 7 roadblocks, bumps in the road, boom, 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 boom. They're starting to stack it and they're starting to get healthy. That Florida State series in 2 weeks, or now a week, that's going to be a lot of fun. But this team's playing really good baseball right now, and they seem to be really hitting their stride in terms of health and lineups going, pitching's going, everything's starting to look and take shape.
Yeah, and I know I referenced last year's version of Tennessee when I was talking about Florida earlier, but we had talked about it I think it was early March we might have said it. When we talked, you asked me who has a better opportunity to be that Tennessee team that goes on the run to Omaha and figures things out. And I really do. Like I said, Wake then, and I say Wake again. Like, they just have that feel to me of they are so talented. We know it's there. We know what they have the capabilities of doing. They can go on a run here and turn things around, especially considering who they have left, right? Like, they get Florida State at home. They get Clemson at home. If they go out and handle business in those two series, they put themselves right back in the mix of the national conversation of being towards the top of the ACC, you know, having a chance to win the ACC tournament. They, you know, if they sweep win both those series, maybe even sweep one of them, obviously probably going to be hosting a regional. You talk about, at that point, now you've positioned yourself to go on that run again and get back to Omaha, and then that's where anything can happen. Now, the interesting thing about them is they've dropped, you know, they dropped the Duke series, and they obviously lose get swept by Carolina at home. So they haven't been as good as they had been in past at home as what we've gotten, you know, as what we expected them to. Their big series win against Virginia Tech's on the road. Or sweep of Virginia Tech was on the road. So it'll be weird. But if they can figure things out, and like you said, it feels like they're starting to get momentum on their side. They're healthy. It seems like they're starting to look like the Wake Forest we expected. Nick Kurtz being a huge part of that in the middle of that order. And it's funny because we've talked about Nick Kurtz, you know, as we should have because of the run he's been on. But when you also see those box scores and you look at what they had done, it was like, yeah, Kurtz had two homers, but like Seaver King's 3-for-5 with a double and a homer. Seaver King's 2-for-4. Seaver King, like, so he's starting to become the player we thought he would be. Winnae's been huge for them. Like, just them getting help. I mean, getting Cade Rowland back in the back end of that bullpen. Like, just because where they had struggled and dropped some of these games we didn't expect is the starting pitching wasn't great, but also the bullpen couldn't hold leads. If you remember the game that they were an out away against Virginia, Cade Rowland's on the mound. They might win that game. They win that series. Like, how different do we look at Wake Forest if they had also won that series? Or maybe they steal another one against Duke when they can hold a lead against Duke in game one. Mm-hmm. So, like, you just look at it, and the fact that he's healthy and their offense is getting healthy. Hartle looked good last weekend. I think that this team, it's still there. Like, everything is right in front of them, and that's so cliche, and coaches love saying that. But it's true. Like, they can go out and win the national championship. This team isn't any less talented than they were in the preseason. They just need to go about it and handle their business. And, you know, they have no room for error at this point, but fine. Like, they're still capable, very much capable of being able to do it and going on a Tennessee-like run from last year.
Yeah, and I think that this year, and this is something we've talked about, the field is wide open. Like, even Arkansas is consensus number one, and there's no questions about it, but there's opportunities for anybody who just happens to start playing better baseball to completely take control of momentum and ride it all the way to a national championship. This is going to be the year that I think we're going to get to the end of it and look back and really reflect on, wow, I didn't really think that team had the talent to do it. Well, I really don't think any team has like a behemoth level of talent like the LSU team did. And even the Wake Forest team, if Wake Forest ran it back with the same club as they had last year and then throw in a Chase Burns, this team would be like LSU level, top level talent and consensus number one and probably the favorite for Omaha to begin with. But this team is obviously talented, not as talented as that group last year, but there's plenty of opportunities for this team to really take hold of their momentum and ultimately ride it all the way to potentially a national championship. And I know that's what the expectations are there. And I will say another thing that stands out, and you mentioned the video on social media that came out, but that felt more like the swagger and fun that Wake Forest baseball has. Right. And I'm not saying that they didn't play with that each and every week. I think they play with energy. I think they play with passion, but there was definitely a component of fun, confident, but not cockiness, just that swagger that's kind of become Wake Forest baseball. And it felt like everything was more in line with what we'd come to expect this year. over the last couple of years when it comes to the Demon Deacons compared to what the last couple of weeks have held. So it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, they're heading up to Boston College, so we're probably going to forget about them for a little bit of time, but they're going to pop right back up as Florida State heads north up to Winston-Salem, and they're going to play next weekend, and that's probably going to be one of the biggest series that we ultimately talk about heading into next week. Let's head to the weekend nine, and let's look ahead to a couple of series that we've highlighted here. So Vanderbilt's going to head down to Texas A&M. Texas A&M currently is sitting at 29-4 as the number three team in the country. Vanderbilt is coming off a series win at the box and Baton Rouge, where they were able to take a series from the defending national champs. It's going to be a really exciting series. Obviously, when it comes to Texas A&M, we've talked about them in passing a couple times. They had that series loss to Florida, the reason why Florida still has a number next to their name, handled business against Mississippi State, swept Auburn, handled business against South Carolina as well, and now they play host to the Commodores. So it's going to be an exciting series. They're playing really good baseball. Only four losses on the year is pretty impressive. But obviously the Vanderbilt Commodores are coming in playing really good baseball as well. So it's going to be a really exciting series down in College Station, Texas.
How good is Braden Montgomery?
Unreal.
I mean, like, you look at A&M, and to me, like, the offense is just – I mean, it's unbelievable. And that's what, you know, this series is going to be a lot of fun. And it's probably the series of the weekend. And Vanderbilt, you know, kind of after they had a couple of the early season hiccups, and then the one at South Carolina, which, you know, that's what happens when you're playing in the SEC or the ACC or any of these conferences where any weekend, right, any weekend you're liable to get beaten. And just like we've seen with Florida and we saw that weekend in Columbia for Vanderbilt, but Vanderbilt's been playing absolutely kind of lights out really since the fourth week of the season. You know, they've been one of the best teams in the country, and they went to Baton Rouge. They dropped game one, and it was like, oh, is this, you know, you kind of thought to yourself, you see the score and you're like, oh, is LSU going to kind of make the statement? And I almost texted you, actually. It was like, we talked about LSU still might steal a series from someone, we wouldn't expect them. But then Vanderbilt goes out and handles their business, you know, and some of that is helped by the fact that LSU doesn't really have anyone to throw in game three. I understand that. And Vanderbilt's pitching's getting healthy and they're really good. And that's what makes this weekend so exciting to me, because just looking, like, you just peruse Texas A&M's numbers on the offensive side of the ball, and I mean, they just got monsters. I mean, like, the fact that Chase LaViolette's a guy with 14 homers, and you could probably point to three other guys that might be more impressive, maybe not power wise. He's got 14, but you know, that offense is just going to be a nightmare to get through. Vanderbilt got the pitching staff that can do it. So to see kind of who has the upper hand this weekend is going to be, it's going to be a fun one to watch.
Yeah. No doubt. No question. And let's talk about the Texas A&M to start here. And, you know, Braden Montgomery might be, like, I know he was a big transfer addition that everybody was talking about, but a lot of the praise has been pushed to Chase Burns, and rightfully so. And I know he's got the flashy stuff, but like, Braden Montgomery is starting to make a name for himself as the biggest transfer addition this offseason in terms of the impact that they've had for their team, right? Being able to walk in and hit 17 bombs, hit 389, really showcased the capabilities, only 24 strikeouts in 33 games. So what with the power, it comes with a lot of contact, a lot of really impressive stuff. And combine that with Gavin Grahovic, who's a freshman corner infielder, has 11 bombs and is playing really good baseball. And it's like, just wait till LaViolette gets heating, like, you know, like, and gets on a roll here, because he's very capable of going on a Nick Kurtz level heater at any point and just going nuclear for a stretch of time. And you're talking about a three-headed monster out included on some of those other guys in this lineup that are all just really, really good. I think, again, nobody's ever questioned Texas A&M's ability to hit necessarily. That wasn't the question last year. It's the reason why they made a change at pitching coach. It's the reason why they're sitting here. But again, and I know we talked about this when we were going into the Florida series, what Texas A&M pitching staff is going to show up. Well, still, they're currently sitting at a 3.23 ERA, 385 strikeouts in 290 innings, showcasing a ton of stuff, only 105 walks. They're led by Ryan Prager, again, who's 2.30 ERA. He had zero earned runs going into that Florida start, so the last couple starts haven't been as smooth for him as it was coming out of the gates and coming off that Tommy John injury. But again, power arms, Chris Cortez throws a bajillion miles per hour out of the bullpen. You know they're going to have guys that are going to come out and attack you with stuff, and this pitching has given them a shot to win each and every game, and that's why they're sitting at 29-4, because everybody knew the offense was going to be good with or without the addition of Brady Montgomery, with or without Gavin Gerhovic, who have obviously both been huge additions and is taking this team potentially from a really good team to a potentially great and historic team. But this pitching staff has been the most impressive part that allows them to compete at such a high level when they really do need that pitching to keep them in every game, even though they can score with everybody.
It really does feel like they're the biggest threat to Arkansas right now, doesn't it? Like, I know Clemson's been fantastic, but we've talked over and over again about some of the question marks that still surround Clemson, and Coach Backett's has done an unbelievable job, and we talked about his teams just find ways to win. But when you just look like top to bottom, to me, I think you will agree that A&M is the biggest threat to Arkansas.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about another team in a little bit that hasn't been talked for the flashiness that they have been since 2021 season. We haven't talked about a ton, but yeah, I would agree that in terms of the firepower, obviously, that the middle of that order, I think I have more question marks about Texas A&M's pitching than Tennessee's. But, I mean, if Prager and Lampkin keep dominating, if they have a really good, like, if there's anything that I can guarantee with Texas A&M, it's that their bullpen's really good. That third starter has been a little bit of a revolving door. They've kind of mixed and matched here, trying to find the right mix of potential guys. But they got bullpen arms, stuff, and more stuff. And they establish the strike zone, they fill it up, and that's impressive nonetheless. So, yeah, I mean, definitely pushing to be in that top spot, no doubt about it.
I mean, dude, look at it. Like, what do we talk about all the time with pitching? Like, when we talk about run prevention, it's like we talk about the only guaranteed positive outcome you have as pitchers is generating swing and miss. 385 Ks and 290 innings as a pitching staff. I mean, like, it's not. It's like Prager, 63-43. You mentioned Lampkin, 50-37. Guy that we haven't even mentioned here, who's been unbelievable out of the bullpen, and Evan Ashenbeck, who's got 44 Ks and 32 innings. And Cortez, 39-26 and 2/3.
And four walks.
Even more impressive is what Prager and Ashenbeck have done. Four walks for Ashenbeck and five for Prager. Like that.
Nuts.
Like, so to me, it's like, yes, they're still the third starter. Absolutely, I understand it. But what do they have? They have stuff. Those guys get hot. They attack the zone. They don't let guys breathe. They generate the swings and misses that they do. That's what we praise Arkansas for, right? Like, that's what we praise Arkansas. And Arkansas's middle of their order does not look like Texas A&M's. It continues to get better. Arkansas's offense has, I think, gone in the right direction since the start of the season. But A&M's offense hasn't stopped since go. Like, they have just continued. And like you said, Braden Montgomery, right up there with Chase Burns, is the top transfer in the country. What he's done has been incredibly impressive. And I really like the way A&M looks. To me, they can challenge Arkansas. They can challenge anybody in the country. They can be one of the last eight standing for sure. Unless they the biggest thing for me is like, will they Texas A&M themselves? There's a good shot they do.
It's allergy season. I'm just freaking snot rocking it all up in my mustache. Okay. And you dropping the, are they going to Texas A&M themselves? Let's head over to the other side for a second here. Obviously, Vanderbilt, we've talked about them in detail coming into the weekend that was as they were heading to LSU. Again, lineup is more good than great. Nobody stands out, but depth, they really are able to showcase depth. Their worst hitter is Davis Diaz, who plays great defense, 270 hitter, couple doubles and homers there. So not a superstar, but again, they've been able to manipulate their rotation. And whether you want to say this is good, whether you want to say it's bad, it depends on the day that you catch them at. Carter Holton's throwing on Sundays right now because of a rain delay. It got them in a position where they were able to win that middle game. And going into Sunday, knowing, especially when you're facing lineups like Texas A&M, going into Sunday when you have your ace lined up and ready to roll, that has to be a really comforting feeling for Coach Corbin and Coach Brown there, as they're able to kind of – all they know they have to do is split game one and two, and they're able to roll out on Sunday with a definite pitching advantage. There's nobody with a Sunday starter outside of maybe Wake Forest that could go toe-to-toe with Carter Holton in terms of stuff, quality, experience, and capabilities of being able to dominate at certain times. So again, Vanderbilt, they just continue to win. And I know that's kind of a theme with Tim Corbin coach teams, is they just win baseball games and they win and win and win. It's one of those things that we'll keep an eye on as this weekend goes in. Again, it's not the superstar laden. There's going to be no Dansby Swansons. There's going to be no Spencer Jones on this team. There's nobody's going to be competing for SEC Player of the Year. RJ Austin's probably the superstar on this team. Replacing is Bradfield, Enrique Bradfield. So it'll be very interesting to see how this series unfolds. Let's head to another series this weekend that we're looking forward to as the NC State Wolfpack head to Clemson, South Carolina to take on the Tigers. You just mentioned Clemson. Obviously, they've had an impressive start to the year. NC State, I feel like this has been kind of common since, I mean, you could even say since even the 2021 season when they made the College World Series and made it all the way to the finals. But some ups and downs this year. They're lacking on the pitching side, as has been the theme over the last couple of years, pitching to a 6.73 on the year. Clemson plays at a small ball yard. They're 28-4. Obviously, we've talked about Clemson several times this year. It's more depth of a depth operation on the mound rather than those workhorse aces, but they definitely have some arms that can definitely win you a ball game when you need to. So, Dan, what are your initial thoughts as we break down this NC State Clemson series and kick it off?
I struggle to have a lot of faith in NC State, and I feel like that's fair. I mean, just what we've seen out of them. And look, Clemson's really good. Clemson continues to find ways to win. Clemson's offense rakes. They can hit for power. We know that that's a small ballpark. Like, I understand all that. They, you know, you're pitching to a 6.73. It's tough to feel good about that. Am I wrong?
No, I just hope that your audio is not coming through the way it's coming through my ears right now, because you sound like a cyborg.
This podcast would be nothing. We would be so bored if we had perfect connection on this. What would we even do?
Can you – I don't know. You got to find something to do with that.
I don't know. I have not changed what I've been doing since we sat down. There's nothing.
Can you change? Like,
I sure can try for you.
And I can't tell if you're trying to change it right now or not, because you're sitting back on 3 minutes ago compared to – let's talk now. You're on mute.
We got anything?
It's the same
thing. I've lost. This is – I've
– oh, I really hope that that it came through normal, but we have no idea.
I lost my mic, so that's the issue.
All right.
I don't know.
Let's try to go through the AirPods now. As you try to figure this out, I'll try to handicap this series. Clemson, South Carolina, their park is very, very small. We saw that when they played Florida State. It was a homer barrage, and that wind was blowing out. NC State can swing it. They're only hitting .288 as a team, but they have 49 home runs on the year, led by Alec Markarevich. Garrett Pennington, who both have 10 and 13 home runs. And then a name that a lot of people are going to recognize, whether you're in the draft community or whether you just follow college baseball, is Jacob Cozart, who's going to be a first round catcher this year. He's struggling in the power department a little bit, only 6 home runs, 3 doubles, but he's hitting .314 currently as it stands. And then Clemson, obviously, we know about the dudes that they have at the top of their lineup. Cam Cannarella's really special talent, 6 home runs, 9 doubles on the year, .331 average. Jacob Hinderleiter, he's got 7 bombs on the year. And then Blake Wright, who went on that heater for a stretch of time that was super impressive, he's sitting at .314 with 13 bombs. He obviously hasn't had as many since that stretch of homers that he had. A lot of guys. Will Taylor, again, kind of a 3 true outcomes guy, really athletic dude. He's hitting .225, 6 home runs, so you'd like to see more in the power department. He was definitely turning it around a little bit, but it hasn't translated. So, Dan, I'll give you an opportunity here to speak, and we'll see if your microphone wants to cooperate with us.
Yeah, are we good?
No, I just got nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. I can't this hear nothing. Is, it says you're talking, is, though.
I am definitely talking. This is
your box is blue, but nothing's coming through. Well, I'm hoping Dan will come back on. So we're going to move on to the rivalry down in the state of Mississippi as the Ole Miss Rebels are going to take on the Mississippi State. What do you got?
Are we good?
Nothing. You just gonna sit here and listen? I think you should go get some sleep.
No, I'm in. Keep going. I'll enjoy.
I really hope it's coming through, and I'm just not hearing it. But I don't think it is.
Doubtful.
So we're going to head down to the state of Mississippi, Dan. I know you're tuning in right now. Now I'm talking to you, but like it's actually kind of weird because I feel like I'm doing a solo podcast with an audience of one, which is just a little awkward here. But Mississippi State and Ole Miss will be playing each other, and I did not do enough time in Oxford, so they'll be at Ole Miss here. It will be a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series. This rivalry has obviously been one that comes with a lot of passion and a lot of energy. The state of Mississippi loves their baseball, and this is going to be one that's going to have a lot of energy. Both these programs have national championships since the turn of the 2020s post-COVID era, as Mississippi State won the national championship in 2021. Ole Miss followed it up in 2022, and both these teams have had solid but unspectacular seasons. Bounce backs, depending on who you ask. Mississippi State's in the top 25. They spent a lot of time in the top 25. They're currently sitting at 21-12, 6-6 in conference play. Ole Miss had a really impressive start to the SEC season, sweeping South Carolina at home. It'll be nice for them to get back in the friendly confines as they've lost 7 straight. That's including their midweek games, and they're 3-9 in conference play. So this is going to be a really big series for them to get right at home. Being able to have that home crowd, you know they're going to be passionate. You know they hate their biggest rival as they're coming to town. So you know it's going to be packed out, and you know they're going to be hoping for a lot of beer showers that weekend. But both teams are obviously been pretty impressive offensively. That's where both these teams' strengths are. Mississippi State has struggled on the mound of recently, but things have gotten a little bit better this year. They're led offensively by Dakota Jordan, one of the best power hitters in the country, with 14 home runs, 9 doubles, and a .372 average. A couple other guys that have stood out, Hunter Hines, 8 home runs, .295 average. As a team, they don't exactly hit for a ton of average. It's .286, 37 bombs. But that kind of 3-4 combination with Dakota Jordan and Hunter Hines has been really impressive. Where things have really turned for Mississippi State recently has been on the mound. Again, they're unspectacular on the mound, but they're pitching to a 4.15. They've got 342 strikeouts and 292 innings. Stuff was never the issue with this team. It was last year they punched out a ton of dudes. They just also gave up a ton of runs, which has a big piece to do with that. But Gerangelo Sinche, that's what I'm going to go with, the switch pitcher as from Curaçao, who also played in the Little League World Series, found that out as recently. It's kind of cool when you go through their roster, just in case you're doing this, Dan, it says BHP, both hand pitcher. Would you go with a B or an S, switch hand pitcher or both hand pitcher?
I don't know if you're going to be able to hear me, but both.
It says it's coming through. I don't know why I can't hear it.
Both.
Both. You said B there. So he's been really impressive actually this year. Obviously, he gets a lot of credit and recognition because he can throw with both hands, which is really unique and cool. But he's also like really gross from both hands, 91 to 93, really good stuff. There's a ton of strikes, and he's really turned a corner, and that's what's allowed this team to really start to be confident in what they're going to be, because he's pitching to a 3-4-5, 61 strikeouts in 44 innings. And then Cal Stephan, he's pitching to a 3-3-7 with 47 strikeouts in 42 innings. Then let's head over to the Rebels. Obviously, again, as a team, they're hitting 272. It's more power over hit in this team, 47 home runs. Andrew Fisher, the transfer from Duke, leads the team with 13 bombs. The Jersey native, we love our Jersey natives there. Ethan Legs as Leg, Luge, what would you say that? I don't know why I'm asking you. It's weird that you're sitting here looking at me. He has 8 bombs, 351 average, and been really good for this club. They really need to get the offense going. Pitching on the pitching side, they're pitching to a 5-8-5, which has been kind of the common theme over the last couple of years. Again, like all SEC programs, stuff is never the problem. 327 strikeouts in 277 innings, 153 walks. That's a lot more walks than you'd prefer from a team that has the tradition and what we've come to recognize as a really formidable program and really good talent developers. They've been struggling on the mound, revolving door in the starting rotation, guys that are struggling to throw strikes. Most guys are at least walking 10 plus, guys that have a lot of innings. So it's really just one of those slow burns. It's a real, again, Ole Miss, they've lost 7 straight. So they've got to get right. They're 3-9 in conference play, with all 3 of those wins coming at the hands of South Carolina in a series sweep to open up conference play. So it has been a while since they've really stacked some wins. And they had some good early season wins. All right, sorry. They won the series against South Carolina, 2 out of 3 against South Carolina. And then they were able to win against Southern Miss, which was a big one. They had a win against Tennessee on the road. So team, you really thought that this is a team that was turning a corner, swept by Kentucky, midweek loss to Memphis, swept by Arkansas. So again, some of that is circumstantial. You played arguably the 2 best teams in the SEC, 2 of the best teams that are playing the best baseball right now in the country. So it's not like this team is just lost. Like there's no hope or there's no chance, but they really have to get right, especially coming back to the friendly confines as they play host to their biggest rival and being able to get that home crowd behind you. It's going to be very important to get a hot start on Friday and make sure that you're ready to kind of win this series. If they can get off on the right leg, heading into the weekend on Friday, I think that'll be really important. So the last series that we'll talk to, and we'll run through it a little bit quickly here since I've got an audience of none, and we are just sitting here. Tennessee is going to play host to the reigning national champion LSU Tigers. Again, for all the fanfare that has come with the Tennessee Volunteers over the last couple of years, this is a team that we do not seem to be talking about as much as we normally would for a 27-6 team. They are 7-5 in conference play, which I think is one of the telltale signs. They've struggled a little bit to figure out their weekend rotation, lost a series at Alabama. They obviously won the aforementioned series against Ole Miss, which was an impressive series at the time. Skated by, depending on how you view it, the series against Georgia. Obviously got blown out on Friday, won just a barn burner 16-11 game, 1-7-0, and then were able to win the series after dropping the Friday night game against Auburn. So it hasn't been the smoothest sailing for this Tennessee team, but They have an opportunity to continue their winning ways. All you have to do is win series, especially in the SEC, and you're going to put yourself in a good position. LSU is absolutely, depending on how you view it, reeling. They might not be as talented as we originally thought coming in the year. Again, the pitching staff outside of Luke Holman, as Gage Jump continues to head in the wrong direction in his first really full year of starting, he's starting to hit that wall there. Are we going to roll Javon Coleman back out there again? Again, in the first inning against Vanderbilt, it was very quick. Double, 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 felt like. They hit a lot of balls hard off of him early in that game. And you know Tennessee, their park plays small. They chase the power. They chase the long ball. So you know they're going to be swinging for the fences. So depending on what Javon Coleman's able to bring. But I don't know which direction you go in. Do you try the Thatcher Hurd experiment again? We're probably too far gone for that. Do you go to maybe one of your young guys that has a lot of potential? I feel like they've given their young guys chances in long stretches. Again, Griffin Herring's a guy who formidable numbers, 31 innings, only 7 walks in 22 innings. He's got a start on the year. Now, was that an opener situation? We don't know exactly what that is off the top there, but maybe he's a guy that needs to start being stretched out and used on the weekend and starting specifically, because Luke Holman has been as good as anybody. And he has replaced the void as well as you could to replace Paul Skeens' level of dominance, 71 strikeouts, 44 innings, 13 walks, 2 ERA. But outside of that, it is just right now, even with, especially with Gage Jump trending in the wrong direction, it is not what you want out of the LSU Tigers and what you've come to expect. The offense is the offense. We've talked about that ad nauseum because they're not as good as last year. Really, Tommy White and Hayden Travinsky are the only guys that are producing at a high level. What we can get out of Tennessee, again, is offense. 338 as a team with 89 bombs. Holy crap. 338 as a team with 89 bombs and 94 doubles and a 671 slugging percentage as a club. Their park is small, but man, that is unbelievably impressive. They have 5 regulars with over 10-plus home runs, led by second baseman Christian Moore, who's been a 3-year starter for this team, hitting 351 with 13 bombs. Really impressive depth. Every guy in their lineup has at least multiple home runs, and even a guy like Cannon Pebbles, who everybody thought was going to come in and make an impact. He's a guy who's talented but hasn't produced up to this point. You know he's a guy that could very easily just get it going at any point in time. The pitching staff has been one that needs to be ironed out. We haven't seen A.J. Russell in a long extended period of time as he's dealt with some injuries here and there. Again, the stuff was dominant in the time that he was out there. Walks were an issue, but 19 strikeouts in 12 innings. The operation is obviously, we know a lot about Drew Beam. Drew Beam hasn't had the best stretches of starting. He had a pretty solid one last weekend against Auburn after a couple of rough ones there. 7 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned, 8 strikeouts. They need Drew Beam to be the ace. He's throwing on Saturdays to keep his rotation because A.J. Russell kicked off the year, but Drew Beam needs to be the guy. He needs to be the unquestioned guy, and the more he's able to give them in terms of that length and not be able to tap into too much of the bullpen is going to be really important for them. AJ Causey is a guy whose numbers aren't as great as really the stuff translates to it being. He's a guy who's moved into the Friday night role, if I'm not mistaken, if I'm doing the math right there. Believe it is, yes, Friday night roll for them. So he's replacing A.J. Russell. He's a guy with really good stuff, low arm slot guy, up to 97 with the fastball. He's gotten roughed around in the last couple outings. He gave up 8 earned runs in an inning and a third against Auburn, and then 7 earned runs against Georgia in 2 2/3. It'll be fascinating to learn if they at any point are able to get A.J. Russell back. He's kind of their best stuff guy from a starting pitcher standpoint. Drew Beam isn't a huge stuff guy. Nate Snead isn't a huge stuff guy. And we've talked about it a lot, how important stuff is when we talk about these starting rotations and the ability to miss bats. And I think that's why AJ Causey keeps getting rolled out there, even while Volunteer fans are probably confused while he keeps rolling out there on Fridays after giving up touchdowns. He could be playing defense for this Tennessee team this year, with that kind of level of 7 runs a game. That's not bad on the football field. But he has 51 strikeouts and only 8 walks in 37 innings. He's funky. He's got good stuff. I trust that they know what they're doing and they're going to keep rolling him out there. But only 302 strikeouts and 270 innings as a staff. That's one of the things that I think they could definitely improve on. But overall, again, this Tennessee team's been as good as anybody throughout this year. It'll be a big weekend for them. And again, maybe we're holding on to too much hope. I'm not going to handicap it and say Tennessee's just flat out the better team because they are, but we never know what could happen with an LSU team that could come in, play good baseball. Again, you get a good start from Luke Holman, and with the questions that do surround this Tennessee pitching staff with AJ Russell hurt in terms of the quality of stuff outside of obviously those guys at the top of the rotation, you know this Tennessee team's going to score. There's no questions about that. But how much are they going to get on the mound is going to be another question that we'll have to see answered. But it's going to be a very good test, and the schedule only gets harder for this Tennessee team. I'm not saying they've had an easy start to the year, because nothing in the SEC is easy when you go Alabama, Ole Miss, Georgia, Auburn, who are all very formidable Omaha contenders. But we've got LSU, and then they head to Kentucky, play host to Missouri. Then they had 2 Florida, then they had 2 Vanderbilt, and then they play host to South Carolina as they wrap up SEC play. So it does not get any easier for this team, and it seems like it's just starting of what would be the second half of the season, which you would consider the majority of it. So, Dan, any closing thoughts before we get out of here?
I'm a ghost.
No, yeah, I know. I appreciate you hopping on here. Obviously, I know things have been crazy. And obviously tech side of things does not seem to work as your microphone's given out. We'll make sure we have a microphone sitting at your doorstep the day you walk home. We'll get on doing that right now. But thank you to our listeners for tuning in, as that will conclude our episode for today. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on all podcast platforms, including Apple Pods, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcast. Check out the YouTube channel if you want to see us laugh at each other as we try to figure out what's wrong with our technical difficulties. If you want to see anything like that, make sure you check and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Don't forget to follow us. Did I say that already? Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at BacksideGB, Instagram at BacksideGroundBalls, and TikTok at BacksideGroundBall. And most importantly, make sure you're sharing with 5 friends, and we'll see you next time on the Backside Ground Balls podcast.